Where's the goat?
Blog Talk Radio.
Where's the goat? Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are currently goatless. Welcome to Eerie House Oldie Timey Radio, number 388, I think. 808 altogether. I'm Dale K from Spook Show, here along with...
Hey, baby, from Weird History of That Movie, and Spaceship One, and Tender of the Goat.
All right, he's back. Gotta have that little critter here to
keep
mirth.
Wasn't paying attention. Wasn't paying attention to the time. Busy jabbering.
Yeah, it's all my fault. I'll take the hit.
Nah.
Keeping Dave off balance before we begin. That feels like that's part of the job for me.
All I have to do is try and stand and I'm off balance. What are you talking about?
Yeah. But you're listening to the real thing. We're not counterfeit. And that's what our radio programs are about. A little bit of funny money there.
Yeah, it's interesting shows tonight. Some fun shows here, including an X-1 that you, Dale, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. You love so many of the X-1s. This is one that
No.
doesn't get played a whole lot.
No, and I have not heard this one, so this will be a first for me. Yay.
So, yeah, it's and there's not a whole lot of those that every once in a while I come across something, but, gee, I don't remember that. And that's one that I had in a cassette of a catalog of 10 shows, something like that. And that was one of the, this was one of the episodes in there. So this is one that I didn't play as often, but it's still such great radio. As I have always said, probably the best science fiction anthology series ever made, X-1.
And this show that you're mentioning is but one of many, 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 many that I've certainly never heard before. Dave, we've been at this for 7 years, and I still enjoy sometimes more listening with you folks that have tuned in, Fogsbane, good old Bob, others that we can't see, and those of you listening in the archives later on. I'm listening to these for the first time, and Dave, of course, knows a lot of these very, very well, as you've been a real audiophile for a long time.
Yeah, ever since I would say my junior high days, but I was getting interested in it even just before junior high. I don't know why, whether I just have an old soul or what, but I always loved the radio drama, and it was my dad who knew I loved it. He's the one that got me interested in the Radio Mystery Theater. I certainly owe the Mystery Theater listening to my dad. But then our local WHBC in Canton would play Lone Ranger episodes every Sunday afternoon, things like that. It was just, it's so great that stations would dare to do something like that. It takes a little bit more work than just flipping a switch and letting some robot carry you along. You know, I'm so glad they did.
Yes, and we're sharing some of that. It's just like, you know how they say, everything old is new again? Well, hey, everything old here is becoming new again as we share it here on Eerie House. We're all, like Dave said, we're all over the place. Got some science fiction, got a detective story, and the thriller and the Whistler, all coming up for you tonight.
Yeah. Yep, just like suspense, the Whistler, they love to have those surprise endings. Whistler, I don't think they almost never made a show that didn't have, you may have been able to figure it out, but in general, they took such a weird turn at the end of the show that nobody saw coming. And I think that'll be the same thing that happens here as well. That'll be what happens in this show here. You see it, they string you along the whole show, and then all of a sudden they go in a different direction at the end. And you go,
yeah,
what?
Drop a bomb on you. It's like Twilight Zone before there was a Twilight Zone, in a way.
Before there was a Twilight Zone, yeah. Yeah.
Twist endings are fun. Keeps me engaged. And where will we start today, David?
Where will we start today? You know, we had a Whistler last week. So let's, you know what we haven't had? Well, we haven't had a Richard Diamond, private detective, and
I think starting off on the detective is a great idea.
Yeah, it's always a fun show. It just for a guy who went from basically a young singing, dancing guy in the movies to try to turn to the tough guy roles, which he did so successfully. Dick Powell was so good at that. And he was so good because the thing I love about the Richard Diamond Private Detectives is his amount of sarcasm all over the place. It just is so sharp. And, of course, the show was created by none other than Blake Edwards of Pink Panther fame. So, you know, he created it. He was a producer and wrote a good deal of the episodes of it. So that's one of the reasons the show is so good.
Sure. And the title fits right in. The Bogus Bills Case.
Absolutely. And it is episode number 25. And it comes to us from October the 15th of 1940. And nine.
Perfect.
Here's Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
Hello there, this is Diamond. I've got a little office near 53rd Street on Broadway, 8th floor. My business? Trouble. What kind of trouble? Well, take your pick. If you come up with something unusual, a new kind of trouble, drop around and see me. Because I'm known along the big street as a shamus, a gumshoe. Or to the guy on Park Avenue as a private detective. If you happen to be stuck with your problem, for $100 a day in expenses, I'll chase it around until I can catch up and break its back. I average about 20 fast rounds a week with old man trouble, and so far, the decision's been on my side. But don't misunderstand me. It's my business to beat him, but I respect him. Trouble goes to work with every trick in the book. So I play it the same way, and believe me, when I put him away for the count, I don't clap my little hands in glee. I know he's just taking a rest, and he'll be back again with some new stunts. Want to know how he works? Well, the other day, I was on the way to my office. I stopped at the corner newsstand, 53rd and Broadway, to buy a paper and to say hello to an old friend.
Hi, Mr. Diamond.
Well, hello, Jeff. How's the newspaper business?
Oh, swell. How's the detective racket?
Oh, swell.
Hey, you don't sound too happy.
Jeff, I couldn't be happier if my hair was on fire. Take my advice, son. When you grow up, be sure and get a job that pays off every week in that little white envelope. Don't ever become a private detective. It's like a penny getting lost in a gum machine.
Well, I'm going to stick to the newspaper business.
Good for you.
Say, I was just about to go across the street to Mary Lou's and get some ice cream. How about it? Can I buy you a cone?
Now, that is a beautiful idea. Let's go.
Aren't you coming to work a little late, Mr. Diamond?
Well, you see, Jeff, I was up kind of late. Research, you know.
Yeah, I know. I see him going into your office all the time. That blonde last week stopped traffic all the way to 42nd Street.
Yeah, she was lovely. Got tired of social standards and shot her husband right through his morning cup of coffee.
Was that the one in the headline?
That's the one.
Oh, hello,
Jeff. Hi, Mary Lou. Take a seat, Mr. Diamond.
Well, what did you and your friend have?
Well, I'm going to have a double strawberry. How about it, Mr. Diamond?
Sounds great.
Two double strawberries.
This is Mr. Diamond, Mary Lou. His office is in that building across the street.
Oh, how do you do?
How are you, Mary?
Well, all right, I guess. Business could get better, and I wouldn't mind at all. Here are your cones.
This is on me, Mr. Diamond.
Oh, no, now put it away.
Oh, now, come on. I asked you over, and that makes it my treat. Here's a five, Mary Lou. Mr. Diamond's money isn't any good today.
Tell you what I'll do, Jeff. Give me a five a minute.
Sure, here.
Now, if you can tell me whose picture's on this bill, you can buy the cones.
That a deal?
That's a deal.
Lincoln. Well, what's the matter? That's right, isn't it?
Hmm? Oh, yeah.
What's wrong?
Where did you get this bill, Jeff?
Well, I just made change for it a few minutes. Hey, what's the matter with that bill?
You two act like you'd never seen a $5 bill before.
Well, this Finn's counterfeit.
What?
That's right. Good job, too.
You sure?
Yep. One of the best engraving jobs I've ever run across. Paper's not too good.
Oh, that's swell. That's real great. I get just out of a whole $5.
Who gave it to you?
I remember the guy, all right. He came by just before you did. Made change for him, the heel.
Yeah, $5 is a lot of papers.
I'll say it is.
Well, maybe you're wrong. You could be.
Not Mr. Diamond. He's a private detective. Used to be a cop.
Look, Jeff, mind if I take this bill along with me?
Nah. What good's it gonna do me?
Well, it's not so bad. Here, I'll give you a good $5 for it.
No, sir. You only learn by mistakes. I made a big one, so I'm out $5. I'll get along.
Look, it's worth the $5. I'm just buying it from you.
Sure, Jeff. Go ahead and take it.
Uh-uh. Thanks a lot, Mr. Diamond, but I just can't.
Okay, Jeff. Maybe I can find the guy who slipped this to you. Maybe we can get your $5 back.
What are you going to do?
Take a run down to the Fifth Precinct. See how much of this stuff is floating around New York. Now, I want you to do something for me, Jeff.
Sure, anything.
I want you to keep an eye out for the guy who gave you this phone.
I'm way ahead of you.
Well, now, that's what I'm afraid of. I want you to promise me if you do spot him not to do anything until you get in touch with me. Promise?
Yeah, okay.
Well, I'll be at the station. Ask for Lieutenant Levinson's office.
Right.
Here's for the ice cream, Mary Lou. Good ice cream, too.
Oh, thanks. I make it here. Right in back. Take a quart home sometime.
I always do, but it generally has a cork in it. I left Mary Lou's ice cream parlor and headed for the Fifth Precinct Police Station. I don't usually start something like that, but when a kid gets fleeced out of a whole day's pay, I get a little hot under the collar. I walked into the squad room and spotted Sergeant Otis putting shine on his big shoes.
Oh, it's you, Diamond.
Now, what good is that going to do you, Otis? You can lose a whole can of polish in the cracks.
What do you mean? My shoes ain't cracked so bad.
Well, maybe not, but I've seen bacon that looked better.
If you want to see the lieutenant, go on in.
Thank you, Sergeant. Until we meet again.
Why don't you stop trying to be so funny?
Sergeant, I'll do it if you'll do something for me.
What?
Cut off your head. That face could start a Harry Carey epidemic. Hello, Walt. Now, what the devil's the about?
What do you mean?
That bilious explosion you just popped up with. Sound like you just swallowed a whole pineapple.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Who's dead?
Huh?
The body you said you found.
The body I said... Uh-oh, no, Walt. You're not built for it.
Who?
No, Walt. It's my routine. It won't work for you.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, sure you do. You wanted to know who's dead. Well, I'm not going to tell you.
Huh?
Don't try to be cute with me. You know what it's all about. I'm not going to be the fall guy. You just hunt for the body.
Wait a minute. I don't know anything about a body.
You wanted to know who's dead, didn't you?
Sure, but that was just a gag.
Okay, have your fun, but I'm not going to tell you.
Tell me what?
Who's dead?
You mean somebody really is?
What are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about what you just said. Now, who's dead?
That's a stupid question.
Why is it?
Well, if you don't know who's dead, what the devil are you doing in charge of homicide? Go on over to the robbery detail.
Now, you wait a minute. You said...
Yes, Walt?
Oh, get out of here.
I did not. I never said, oh, get out of here. When I came in, I said, hello, Walt, and you said, uh-huh. Then I said, what do you mean, uh-huh? And you wanted to know where the body was.
I did not. I said, who's dead?
Why?
Oh, no, please, I'm an old man.
Oh, Walt, get away from that window and take a look at this.
Oh, please, do I have to? It'll probably explode.
Now, be a good boy and open your little eyes.
All right, but I just know I'll be sorry.
Here.
Hmm? You don't owe me any money.
Well, if I did, I'd make sure to pay you off in this stuff.
Why, what's wrong with... Where'd you get this?
Some guy slipped it to Jeff, the newsboy. He got change for it.
Oh, that certainly is a nice stunt.
Well, maybe the guy didn't know he was passing counterfeit.
I doubt it. You don't give a newsboy $5 for a paper.
Okay, tell me about it.
The stuff's been flooding the city. We can't get a lead. Picked up a couple of passes, but they won't crack.
How do they work?
Look, Rick, this isn't my department. The Treasury boys are working on it right now. Why don't you go over and talk to them?
Well, if you want to be snooty about it.
Now, you wait a minute, Diamond. Yeah? Lieutenant Levinson, homicide.
Is Mr. Diamond there?
Now, wait a minute. Rick, it's for you. Yeah, wait just a minute. Here, Diamond, and if you're mixed up in something...
Walt, be quiet. Hello?
Mr. Diamond?
Yeah, Jeff?
Yeah, I just spotted the guy who slipped me the phony bill. He went into the bar next to the ice cream parlor.
You stay where you are. I'll be right over.
I'll be at the stand.
Rick.
Yeah?
Please.
Walt.
Yeah?
Bye.
Jeff.
Oh, Mr. Diamond. He hasn't come out yet. He's still in the bar.
Come on.
Where are we going?
Leave your papers for a second. I want you to point him out.
Okay. He's a big guy. You better be careful.
Big guys always make me careful.
You want me to go in with you?
Just stick your head in the door and point him out, and then go on back to your papers. If I start bleeding, I'll scream. See him?
No. Yeah, there he is. Over in that booth.
Well, well, well.
You know him?
Yeah. Go on back to your stand.
Oh, golly, Mr. Diamond, can't
I? No, Jeff. Go on back.
Okay.
Hello, Walker.
Huh? Oh. What do you want, Shaunus?
Well, I'll have a talk. Mind if I sit down?
Does it make any difference?
Not much.
Then sit.
You passed a phony five spot this morning.
I did? Well, shame on me.
How many more you got on you?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You want me to turn you upside down and shake it out of you?
Diamond.
Yeah?
Boo.
Walker.
Yeah?
Boy, you... Let go! Oh, my arm.
You want it back?
Yeah.
Oh. Now let's see your pockets.
Okay, okay.
Get on your feet. I want to see what you're doing.
All right.
Okay, dump them.
Hey, what's going on here?
Just relax, bartender. I'm taking care of some business.
Well, there ain't going to be any rough stuff in my joint, so you better relax, sonny.
Yeah, make this guy take his big paws off of me. He's trying to shake me down.
Oh, yeah? You want me to call the cops, sonny?
Maybe that's not a bad idea. How about it, Walker? You want him to call the law?
I don't care who he calls. Just get out of my way, Diamond.
You're not going anywhere.
Now, I told you to lay off, sonny, and I meant it.
Now, let him go, you hear me?
Look out, he's making a break.
Just let him be.
Get out of my way, Pop. You're too old to lose another set of teeth.
I ain't turning you loose until that guy makes the street.
Sorry, Pop, you better take a chair.
Happened.
You see which way you went?
Yeah, there it goes around that corner.
Stay at the ice cream parlor, Jeff, so I can get you if I need you. I took off like a seagull in the hurricane. I turned the corner and spotted my man jumping into a cab, so I did the same. He led me across town to a little dive on 13th Street and got out of his cab. My boy parked up the block, and we watched while Walker looked around for a tail. When he was satisfied, he'd given me the shake, he went in. I paid off my cabbie and followed. It was another bar, and Walker wasn't anywhere in the room. I sat down, ordered a beer, and waited. After about 10 minutes, I saw a couple of guys wander out of a door in the back. A couple of minutes later, a couple more wandered out. So I wandered in. It was a small-time gambling setup. The kind you can throw in the back of your car if the cops come. I started getting that lousy feeling again. You don't just walk into a place like that unless someone wants you to. And if they do, it's usually because they got it fixed so you stay around. Maybe permanently.
What are you tailing me for, Diamond?
Why? Make you uncomfortable?
Yeah.
That's a cozy setup. Good way to get rid of bad money. Pay the winner off with counterfeit.
I think we'd better go back to my office.
Oh, I don't know. I might have a little fun here. I'll bet if one of those guys at the table knew he was going to be paid off in counterfeit, he'd just about tear this place apart. And you, too.
Diamond, don't be stupid.
Oh, something new's been added.
Yeah, and it makes so much noise when it goes off. Let's go back to my office, huh?
For some reason, I just can't think of a good argument not to.
This way. Have a seat.
My ankles get lumpy when I sit down. Bad circulation.
Then stand on your head.
It doesn't work. I keep talking to toes all day.
How'd you get onto this setup?
Oh, luck. You passed a bad bill to a newspaper boy. He spotted you for me.
You know what happens to you?
No. As a matter of fact, I was thinking what's going to happen to you.
What do you mean?
Treasury boys, homicide, Fifth Precinct. And tomorrow we're taking a full-page ad in the Times. You should do a big business.
You're lying.
Okay. I think I'll sit down while you wrestle with it.
You mean the team I know about this place and me?
The only way they'll get to know you any better is when they give you a room number at Sing Sing. Oh, you mind if I put my feet up?
Oh, go ahead.
He kept asking questions, not waiting for answers. He was good and worried. And as long as I could keep him that way, the longer I was going to keep on breathing.
I don't believe one rotten thing you said, Diamond.
Okay. He kept trying to convince himself that I was lying. He wanted to shoot me in the worst way. He moved around behind his desk and sat down. Bless his little heart. I had both feet on the front of his desk, so I shoved out his heart. I pinned him against the wall of the desk and jumped up to get better leverage. I shoved so hard the front of the desk nearly cut him in two. He was stuck and he couldn't use his arms.
I can't breathe.
You want to tell me about it?
I don't know a thing.
Okay. You look pretty silly from the waist down. Come on, Walker. If I mash you anymore, they'll be able to use you for wallpaper.
Yeah. Okay, I'll
Okay.
Now, leave the gun in your pocket. When I pull the desk back, put your hands on top of it. You try a stunt and you end up in halves.
Okay. What do you want to know?
Who's the big wheel behind the counterfeit ring?
You give me a chance if I tell you.
No deals.
Can't blame me for trying.
All right, you tried. Now, you want back in the vice?
No. I'll tell you.
Walker! He died with his head rolled back and his eyes staring up like he wanted to starve for trying. Whoever shot him had been out in the alley and had nailed him through the window. I looked out, but the killer had disappeared. So I put in a call to homicide, and finally, Walt and his boys arrived.
Diamond, don't you ever get tired of corpses.
Well, of course not. I just do my bit and then try to make you happy.
Hey, you want me to call the wagon and get the coroner downhill, Lieutenant?
No, Otis. I thought we might all sit around and wait for the dead man to say something.
Oh, I was only asking, Lieutenant.
Well, start using that mallet head of yours, you mallet head, and make a report.
Okay.
Now, Diamond, I want to know how you got mixed up in this thing.
Well, the dead man was the one who slipped the paper boy the phony five. I tailed him, and he was just about to tell me who was behind the ring when he got a hole in his head.
Oh, he was going to tell you, was he? Just like that. What did you do, set his clothes on fire?
No. We were playing truth and consequences, and he fibbed, so I...
Now, you stop that. This guy was the only link we had on the counterfeit ring. And you have to fix it so he dies. Rick, there's enough phony money floating around New York right now to start another Black Friday. This is the best setup we've run into since Dad Foster operated in 1937.
Dad Foster?
Yeah, Dad Foster. You remember hearing about him?
Yeah, is he still doing time?
No, he served his sentence and he's gone straight ever since.
How do you know? Where is he?
He runs a little saloon on 53rd Street.
53rd? Thanks, Walt.
Oh, now, you wait a minute. Who the devil are you calling?
A quiz program. I want to win an electric chair.
Oh.
Mary Lou's Ice Cream Parlor.
Is Jeff the newsboy there?
Why, yes. It's for you, Jeff.
Thanks.
Hello?
Jeff, this is Mr. Diamond. I want you to do me a favor.
Sure, anything for you.
Okay, now, you know the saloon next to the ice cream parlor?
Yeah.
You know the bartender?
Yeah, old guy. Buys a paper from me every night.
All right. Now, stay in the parlor and keep an eye on the front of the saloon. If the bartender comes out, find out where he goes. But for Pete's sake, be careful.
Sure, Mr. Diamond. I'll do what you say. Is something up?
Well, could be. Now, if anything happens before I get there, call Lieutenant Levinson. I'll tell you all about it when I see you.
Good Godfrey.
Action all over the place.
That's right, action. Richard Diamond. He is a wise guy.
These scripts are just so clever. And Dick Powell just pulls them off so well. He just, wow, we were playing Truth or Consequences and he lied.
Funny stuff.
I hadn't noticed that before. I've heard this several times. I hadn't heard that line until tonight. Oh, my.
Truth or Consequences, and he lied.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right up there with he had a hat. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
speaking of which,
yeah.
We're hoping Gar gets well soon. He obviously isn't with us, or you certainly heard him right now. CW, maybe
yeah,
she'll join us later. We'll see.
Yep. He was hoping to make it because he actually listened to the stories and he wrote some morals for us that we shall try to give. Yep.
Steal.
Now, stealing is when you don't give them credit. We're giving them credit here. Yeah.
Well, stealing is also not letting them know we took it. No, he sent it to us. So
no, he sent it.
He's thinking about you guys. All right. He's
yes,
thinking
he
about you guys. He doesn't want you to be stuck with just me and Dave.
That's right. He says, You poor people.
You poor people. What the heck do you got to deal with around these places? So for
yeah,
them
yeah.
of you what ain't looking in the chat, or maybe you're listening in the archives, good old Bob shared some good information about a Clear Channel frequency 1020 AM radio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that plays old-time radio dramas.
I didn't realize they play, you know, a good old KDK. Clear Channel, and it was confusing because there was the iHeartRadio people called themselves Clear Channel, which kind of was misleading because Clear Channel meant they were the only station licensed on that frequency
throughout the entire United States in case of emergency. They could beam out 50,000 watts of entertainment. So I didn't realize that KDK was playing it. That's great. I'll have to see their schedule to see when they do that and see if we can try and pull them in once.
Sure. Sunday night, so sure if you haven't had enough after you're done with us on the weekend, shoot on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Great. And so actually there was one that the Crosley owned, the same guy that owned the radios and such that also owned the Cincinnati Reds, but he owned a radio station, and I think it's WKRC. And at one time for like 1 or 2 years, the FCC allowed them to go to 100,000 watts AM. They were the only one ever allowed to do that by the FCC. And after that 1 or 2 year experiment, it was done. They wouldn't let anybody else do that. So there's a blast for you.
A blast from the past. All right. Let's see what KDKA is doing on Sunday nights.
Ooh, you got the schedule there. They should have the schedule too.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it. Not seeing the oldies. Nope.
Cool. We'll share it with you. And you know what? That's the thing about the 70s. There was a re-interest in the radio dramas and radio comedies because so many National Public Radio stations bought packages that I know up here in Kent at WKSU, they had the Great Gildersleeve. They had the lineup. They had trying to think what else they had. Cisco Kid. I'm trying to think of all the different stories that they shared with us all. And people just ate those, like myself, just ate those things up. So
surround yourself with old time radio. And you always got our archive shows if you get tired of everybody else. And you should.
Should listen or get tired of everyone else?
That's right. So you should listen.
Yes.
But there you go, and we might as well wrap up. Richard Diamond, the bogus bills case.
Absolutely.
Don't get a bridge.
You're getting to be a pretty important fellow, Jeff. Phone calls now.
Oh, that was Mr. Diamond. He wants me to stay here and keep an eye on the front of the saloon. Okay?
Oh, sure, of course. But why did he want you to do that?
Oh, it's something big, I think. Something to do with the bartender that works there.
The bartender?
Yeah. I'll just sit up in front here and keep an eye out.
Look, Jeff, watch the store for me, will you? I've got to go in back and pack some ice cream to be sent out.
Sure. Maylou! Guess I'd better get it myself. Maylou's ice cream parlor.
Can I talk with Mary Lou?
She went in back. I'll get her for you. Just a minute.
Thank you.
I tell you, it's getting too risky. That Diamond's a private detective.
Yeah, he came in the bar and started to rough up Walker.
Well, that stupid Walker should have been more careful about passing out that money. What if Diamond catches him and makes him talk?
He caught up. But he didn't make Walker talk.
What do you mean?
I took care of Walker. I got a good shot at him from the alley.
Well, maybe it's better like that. But look, if we don't...
Hello?
Yes?
Mary Lou isn't here. Get off the line.
What?
Yeah, get off!
Operator.
Get me the 5th Precinct Police Station. It's a matter of life and death.
I'll connect you.
Oh, golly, please hurry.
I'm ringing.
5th Precinct.
Is Mr. Richard Diamond around there? He said to call Lieutenant Levinson.
Oh, Diamond isn't here. Now, there's a lieutenant.
You know where I can reach them?
Yeah, but that's about it all. Who's this?
I'm a friend of Mr. Diamond's. I'm in an ice cream parlor.
Ice cream parlor? Look, son.
No. I just heard someone say that they'd killed a man named Walker, and I think I know who's behind the counterfeit ring.
What's the address?
It's...
Hello. Hello, kid. What's wrong? Hello?
Good lucky we came out this way.
I wonder how he heard us.
Walk back and open the door. What are we going to do with him?
Well, let's tie him up and gag him. There's a closet in the back, and we can put him in there until it's safe to take him out.
No, but he's making too much trouble the way he is. Okay.
I can get him back there. You better go on over to the bar in case someone shows up.
All right. Later tonight, I'll take the kid down to the river and teach him how hard it is to swim when he's dead. Now, you listen here, young fella. If you're back here for trouble...
Dad, I'm back for a lot of trouble, and I think you're going to help me out.
You'd better leave, sonny, or I'll call the law.
Why don't you?
What do you want?
I want to know how long you've been back in the counterfeit racket.
Now, look, sonny, I've been going straight for a long time.
You know something, Dad? I don't think so. Let's get down to the station and talk about it.
You got a warrant, Shamus?
I got a nasty disposition. You want me to show you?
No.
You want a gun, Dad?
Why, what difference does it make?
I'm going to look at it. A guy named Walker got dead from a gun. Now, let's see it.
Sonny.
What is it?
I can't show it to you.
Yeah, why not?
Because I got it under the bar, pointed right at your belly. If I drag it out, it might scare the customers.
Oh, it's like that, huh?
It sure is. You see that door there in the back?
I know.
That's a good boy. You just keep walking along your side of the bar and don't try anything. I just had my floor scrubbed. It'd be a shame to spill you all over. Okay. Open the door. Go on out. Up the alley.
You shoot Walker?
I might have.
Oh, well, you got your printing presses.
You're just full of questions, aren't you, sonny? Okay. Stop here.
Behind the ice cream parlor, huh? Well.
Mary!
Make mine hot fudge with the nuts.
Mary!
For just a minute. Say, what's the idea? I thought you... Oh.
Good afternoon. I'm selling a new brand of Indian nuts, great for banana splits.
What's the shamus doing here?
He's too smart. I gotta cut off his education.
Are you crazy? This guy's got friends. That kid was calling the Fifth Precinct, remember?
Kid?
Yeah, your little news hound.
What did you do with him?
He's all right until tonight. We got him locked up.
Dad, I think I'll make you eat that .38.
I don't think so. No difference if I kill you right here.
Oh, hold it, Dad. We can't have a gun going off back here. Even if we could hide the shamus, they'd find the presses.
Oh, so that's it. Those ice cream machines, the cover-up.
Ain't he smart?
What do you do? Ship the stuff out in ice cream cartons?
What's with you? You want a tour of inspection?
Come on, now, take it easy. He won't be smart for long.
Well, how are you going to do it?
We're going to take a walk, aren't we, Shamus?
Oh, I have the most horrible instep. I'll never make it without skates or something.
You'll make it. Come on, the car's around front.
Hey, what's happening in the street?
Oh, Dad.
Yeah, it's only some drunk come out of the bar the wrong way. Funny, I didn't see him in
here. Oh, this is very confusing. If this is 53rd Street, somebody's stolen some building. Oh, hey, hello.
Now, take it easy, Shamus. I'm putting the gun in my pocket, but it's still right in line with your belt.
I'm going back inside.
No. Play it straight, just like we were talking.
Well, you're pretty unsociable, to say the least. What's the matter? Can't you even say hello? I'm lost.
Sure. You're in an alley. The entrance is right out there.
Oh, yeah? Well, would you mind showing me? I seem to be a little confused.
Now, look, it's right up there. Just keep going.
Hey, where'd you go?
Oh, no.
Oh, there you are, Lieutenant.
At the top.
Look out, Walt. Get the girl, Walt. Come on, Dad. Give me that gun.
Let go of me. Let me go, you fucking copper.
You got him, Rick? He won't play. There. Now he will.
Let
just take
go.
It easy, lady.
Hey, what's going on?
Otis.
Yeah?
Go out and start walking around the block.
Huh?
You hear me? Go on.
Okay, but I don't get it. What do you want me to walk around the block for?
I want you to get used to it, because that's what you're going to be doing for the rest of your time on the force. In Flatbush.
Flatbush?
Yes.
No. Gee, Mr. Diamond, thanks for the dinner invitation, but where are we going?
Well, I'm going to introduce you to Miguel. She's a redhead, Jeff, so no cracks about my office research.
Oh, sure. But don't you think you should have called her first? How do you know she's got enough dinner?
Jeff, this girl's got more steaks in her deep freezer than a bullfight arena sees in a year. Here we are.
Yes? Oh, good evening, Mr. Diamond.
Good evening, Francis. This is Jeff, Francis. He's going to have dinner with us.
Hi.
Oh, hi. Come right in. Miss Asher's in the study, Mr. Diamond.
Thank you, Francis.
Mr. Diamond.
Yes?
You know the various items that you've left with me for safekeeping?
Look, Francis, I promise I'll get them out of hock as soon as I get a paying client.
Oh, no, no, it's not that, sir. I didn't really want to hold them as security in the first place. But as long as you insisted in such a fine collection, I'd like to show them to, well, to my girl, sir.
Why, sure, Francis. I didn't know you had a girl.
Oh, yes, sir. She's the upstairs maid in the apartment below us.
Oh.
I'm afraid I told her a wee fib to get acquainted, as it were. She thinks I'm an undercover agent, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to prove it.
Well, my gun and the badge should do the trick. And if it doesn't work, just get under a cover.
Oh, my George, that was the real... Yes, sir. Good evening, sir.
Come on, Jeff. We're not appreciated.
Rick. Oh, hello. Hello.
Helen, this is Jeff, the boy who's helping me send Dad Foster and company back to prison. Jeff, this is Helen Asher.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you, Jeff.
They had him locked up in the closet for a couple of hours, and he looked kind of hungry when he got him out. How about it, honey? You think you can grind up another cow?
Oh, well, there's plenty for Jeff and me, but you've got to make up for three things.
Three things?
Yes. First of all, you haven't called me in 2 days. Second, you're half hour late for dinner. And third, well, I'll tell you later.
I'll leave the room if you want me to.
No, no, Jeff. You stay right here. You're going to literally see a man sing for his supper.
Helen.
All right. Come on, Jeff. We'll go dig into those nice, fat, juicy steaks.
Oh, boy.
Steaks? Wait a minute. My taste buds just started whipping each other. My vibrato may sound like a machine gun, but I'll do it.
Well, I thought you were kidding. Is he really going to sing, Miss Asher?
No, I'm not going to sing Miss Asher. I'm going to do a little song I used to sing with hip boots and a gondola. Oh.
You're breaking my heart 'cause you're leaving. You've fallen for somebody new. It isn't too easy believing you'd leave after all we've been through. It's breaking my heart to remember the dreams we depended upon. You're leaving a slow, dying ember. I'll miss you, my love, when you're gone. I wish you joy, though teardrops burn. But if someday you should want to return, please hurry back and we'll make a new start. Till then you're breaking my
Diamond, did you really sing in a gondola with hip boots on?
Yeah, that's right, Jeff.
Well, I know you don't need the hip boots anymore. Will you loan them to me?
What for?
I want to wait out of here.
Well, get him.
For that, you get two desserts.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg, Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Tommy Bernard, Sammy Hill, Lou Krugman, and Polly Bear. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Richard Diamond is written by Blake Edwards and directed by Richard Sandville. Dick Powell soon will be seen in the screen version of the best-selling novel, Mrs. Mike. Now, this is Eddie King inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Thank you. Saturday night brings you some of the week's best radio entertainment when you tune for the stars on NBC. Stay tuned to NBC every Saturday evening for a great lineup of programs, including Hollywood Star Theater, Ralph Edwards' Truth or Consequences, Your Hit Parade, A Day in the Life of Dennis Day, The Judy Canova Show, and Grand Ole Opry. All the best on NBC. Stay tuned now for Victor Mature and Hollywood Star Theater on NBC.
Victor Mature and Dale Immature. First show, Richard Diamond.
Yeah, you know what? That we talk about some of these guys. They're such a regular on radio, Dale. We don't usually talk about the ladies. I just got to thinking about here. You know, the Virginia Gregg, of course, was his girlfriend in this. She just did a tremendous amount of radio. She was Effie in Adventures of Sam Spade. She was in Dragnet, Dr. Kildare. She was Miss Kitty on Gunsmoke, Radio's Gunsmoke. Jack Benny, she did a lot of those. Let George Do It. I think she was his assistant there. Lux Radio Theater, One Man's Family. Johnny Dollar, Screen Guild Theater, CBS Mystery Theater. She did some of those. I'll have to look and find those. The Zero Hour, which was the Rod Serling series, and the Mutual Radio Theater. All over radio. And before that, she played double bass with the Pasadena Symphony and Pops. How's that?
What a boring life.
I'm telling you.
This radio program from 1949, you know, according to the Garculator, $5 then is the same value in 1924 as in 2024 as $65.47.
Right? Which today is almost the cost of a newspaper, yeah.
And that's not the only thing we can learn. Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story, written by Gar. I ain't taking the blame.
Right.
With apologies to Gar, I'm in it now. Ice cream and forgery. Don't miss. Dave,
unless the ice cream is quadruple. Yep, the ice cream is quadruple. Then they might make it.
Ah, yes. Anything with ice cream goes good.
Yep.
Ice cream and root beer. Ice cream and beer. Has anyone ever passed a bad bill on you, Dave, that you know of?
Not on me in particular. I know that when I was assistant manager at Burger King, there was a bad bill pushed through once, but I was not the one that accepted it. And so things got a whole lot more careful after that. Because actually what happened in our case is that the Treasury Department slipped down. We were out completely. The Treasury Department slipped down and grabbed that bill so they could study it and try and find out where it's coming from and try and stop any further use of it. So that was the only experience I've had was funny money, except for that $1 million bill that I saw myself and you and Gar and CW on. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You're talking about the little ad that some goof whipped up together. $1 million.
What about you? You worked the bar circuit. Did they slip anywhere you were at?
In the 80s and even into the 90s, beer was kind of cheap. There wasn't like a lot of big bills being moved around. Same in the for a short time I worked in the Hoochie Coochie bars introducing the entertainment, shall we say. I don't recall anything like that going on there. But you know when stuff like that happens, that's when they do the training.
Yeah, if they ever found out, the bouncer would do more than just bounce you out.
Oh yeah. You would literally bounce. Boingy boingy.
Yeah,
boingy.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Well, I remember old Alfalfa's pub. We didn't have too big of a problem, though. They usually had a cop working the front door.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah. I got to know them well, and it's great when these guys start to fight, and then you're playing cartoon music. They stop, and they look at you like, we can't fight to this. Yeah, I know. And the cops love me for that, because then it made their job a lot easier.
Yeah. Yep.
I could have drove home backwards naked.
Because that way they think you're leaving instead of coming. Yeah.
Oh, Dave, that was horrible. We ought to go chronologically. The next one would probably be the Whistler.
That would be it. The Whistler, yes.
Good, because I'm looking forward to that twist ending, and then we'll wrap things up with a little science fiction-y type entertainment.
Yes. Save the best for last in this particular case. Great story there. But I tell you what, that script was so good and so quick on Richard Diamond, their deliveries, and Art Q. Bryan as the police detective in charge of homicide. He also was Floyd the Barber on The Great Gildersleeve. He was also Doc Gamble on Fibber, McGee, and Molly. And he was the original Elmer Fudd.
Before Mel Blanc took over the voice.
Before Mel Blanc took it over, yeah.
I know. I never knew that because I just knew it was a different guy. He looked different, too. Initially.
Yeah. He looked a lot more like Arthur Q. Bryant did in real life. He was a very pear-shaped, shall we say. Which I know the feeling.
That's all right. I'm working on beach ball shaped there. He just rolled
my doctor
myself
said,
places.
Hey, shape. I said, what are you talking about? Round is a shape? You know?
Yeah. Round is definitely a shape. You don't want to be shapeless. That's no good either. So,
that's right.
Happy medium, I guess. Whistler. The Whistler. The disappearing woman.
Yeah, interesting title. It's a fun little show about a magician with a twist ending. And with that, it is the episode. Believe it or not, I didn't realize so many of these were made. Episode number 568, and it comes to us from May 3rd of 1953.
The Whistler. Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadow. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now the Whistler's strange story, The Disappearing Woman.
Beautiful women were very important to the great Grafton. In fact, he had always admitted that his success as a magician depended on an attractive assistant. But when Grafton arrived in Los Angeles from his South American tour and hurried across town to his agent's office, he was alone. Yes, you've been alone ever since you left South America, haven't you, Jim? It was the only safe way in view of your sideline, a sideline which had been netting you big profits. It's well after office hours when you enter the Carlton building. The elevator is automatic now, and there's no one around. But you know that your agent, Earl Crawford, is expecting you, that he'll be waiting in his office on the fourth floor.
Oh, so you're back, Brett.
I came here straight from the boat, Crawford.
What happened in South America?
Why, I did my act, played the spots you booked for me.
I'm not talking about that.
I know you're not.
What about the money?
Well, it's a long story, Crawford.
What do you mean it's a long story? You were able to get rid of the stuff down there, weren't you?
I was able to dispose of most of the money, but not all of it.
Oh, I see. Well, we'll settle up now.
I can't settle up, Crawford.
What do you mean?
I haven't got it.
You haven't got it? What are you talking about?
I was robbed on the boat coming back. Somebody broke into my cabin. The secret compartment in my trunk.
How did it happen?
I don't know. I did exactly as you told me. Stayed by myself, only left my cabin to eat, spoke to no one.
What about women?
I didn't speak to a woman on the entire trip.
Well, what'd you do about the robbery?
Nothing. I couldn't do anything. My hands were tied.
What do you mean?
I hadn't destroyed the rest of the counterfeit.
Why, you idiot.
It was stolen along with the real money. If the thief was found, the counterfeit would be discovered.
And whoever got it knows you're mixed up in the counterfeit racket.
That's about it, Crawford.
You're in trouble, Grafton. In plenty of trouble.
What do you mean, trouble?
I didn't print that phony money myself, you know.
I know that.
There are people higher up. You do your explaining to them, too.
I don't want to get involved.
You are involved, Grafton.
But you said... What's the idea of the gun, Crawford?
I'm taking no chances. Just come along. Tell your robbery story to the big boys.
But listen, Crawford, you can cover for me. Book my act, and I'll make it up.
Nothing doing.
Then I'll get somebody else to book me and turn my entire salary over to you.
You can't get a booking without a new girl to help you. Takes time. As a magician working alone,
okay,
you're just...
Okay, Crawford. Let's get going.
Right.
Just a minute, Crawford. Look out! That was the oldest trick in the world, Crawford. And you fell for it.
Put down that gun, Grafton. Let's talk this over. Nobody knows you took the counterfeit to South America. I'll cover for you.
You bet you will, Crawford. You bet you will.
It was all unexpected, wasn't it, Jim? But you hope that you may be able to slip out of the building unseen. You wipe your fingerprints from the gun, drop it beside Crawford's body, and then turn out the light. You steal out into the hall, you snap the lock on the office door. No one is in sight. You're heading for the stairway when a young woman comes around a turn in the corridor and stands squarely in your path.
Oh, Mr. Grafton.
I beg your pardon?
Well, you are the great Grafton, aren't you?
What makes you think so?
Well, you were pointed out to me on the boat. I tried to talk to you.
Sorry, I'm in a hurry.
But I want you to help me, Mr. Grafton.
Yes, well, what can I do?
My name is Anita Ballard. I'm a dancer. I just got back here from Central America. I just have to have a job right away, and I don't know anybody in town.
I see.
There's a booking agent on this floor. His name is Earl Crawford. You know most of the agents. Perhaps you could introduce me to him.
It's not likely that he would be in his office at this hour.
No. Well, I suppose not. I just came here out of desperation. I heard that Crawford always has an opening of some sort.
Well, if you're looking for a job, maybe you won't need to see Crawford after all.
Well, what do you mean, Mr. Grafton?
I might have something for you. I need a girl for my act.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I've had experience as a magician's assistant. I was a box jumper with Barton one season.
Well, that sounds fine. We'll talk about it. Over a steak.
A perfect idea. Over a steak.
By the time you reach a nearby restaurant, you've a plan of action in mind, haven't you, Jim? Anita Ballard must disappear before Crawford's body is discovered. He must not be around to testify that she met you on the fourth floor of the Carlton building. As you look at her across the restaurant table, you wish there were some other way, don't you, Jim? She's strikingly beautiful, with classic features and long black hair. She would make the perfect assistant for a magician. But you know that your one chance is to get her in a car on some pretext and drive her out of town. And as soon as possible, before anyone you know sees you together.
You're not enjoying your stay, Mr. Grafton. Something bothering you?
No, Anita. Nothing. I'm just thinking.
About what?
About you. About what to do with you. I suppose you're prepared to travel.
Oh, how soon?
Well, I have some extra equipment stored in San Diego. I think I'll drive down there tonight. You haven't anything to keep you here, have you?
No, not a thing.
All right, then, Princess.
Princess.
My assistant is always called Princess Naya.
That's a pretty name.
And you're a pretty girl. I'm sure we'll get along well together.
I'm sure we will.
Well, let's go.
Hey.
Well, well, if it isn't the great Grafton.
Oh, hello, Fillmore.
Thought you were in South America, Grafton.
I just got back. If you'll excuse us.
Now, wait a minute, Grafton. I ought to meet the princess. I suppose this is the present Princess Naya.
Well, yes, I am, Mr.
Fillmore. Well, there have been a lot of Princess Nayas, each one more beautiful than the last. But I must say, Grafton, you've outdone yourself this time. You know, with such a lovely partner, I might be able to find you a booking.
Well, you're very flattering, Mr. Fillmore. I take it that you're an agent?
That's right. Oh, mind if I sit down a minute, Grafton?
Oh, no. No, of course not.
I'm not kidding about the booking, Grafton. I need a magic act for the Garden Club in New York.
What does it pay?
$500 a week, 3-week guarantee.
Oh, that sounds interesting. But
no buts about it, Grafton. You'll take it and you know it. But we're going to have to hurry. You and the princess have got to leave for New York on the midnight plane.
Well, Jim, the meeting with Fillmore upset your plans, didn't it? And you're forced to take Anita to New York as the Princess Naya, the assistant in your magic act. Her presence near Crawford's office at the time of his murder makes her dangerous to you, doesn't it? And you can't see a way out of the situation. But when you read an item about the shooting in the New York papers, you receive a surprise. Crawford's counterfeit dealings were suspected by the police, and underworld characters are being sought in connection with his death. Yes, it's a big load off your mind, isn't it? And especially when Anita makes no reference to the affair and turns out to be very good in your act. Then, at the end of your first week at the club, you knock at her dressing room door.
Come in.
Good news, Anita. I've been talking to the manager. He's crazy about the act.
We're getting over well, aren't we?
Yeah. You're doing a swell job.
That's nice to hear.
Oh, by the way, I got paid. Here's your salary.
I want to talk about that.
What's the matter? Isn't it enough?
No, it isn't.
Well, what do you want?
I want half, Jim.
Half?
$250, half the act.
But in Los Angeles, we agreed.
The circumstances were different then. At that time, I didn't know that your agent Crawford had been murdered.
Well, what's that got to do with it?
Everything. You did it, and I know it.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Everything fits together. Crawford was probably mixed up in counterfeiting. Same as you.
Counterfeiting? I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, you do. Our meeting outside his office wasn't accidental. I'd followed you there from the boat.
But why?
Because I found out you were mixed up in the counterfeit racket.
How?
That's my business. And from now on, I intend to cash in on my discovery.
What do you mean by that?
I stole your money on the boat, Jim. There's nothing you can do about it. But I'm going to use it for your own best interest.
My best interest?
Mm-hmm. The act needs dressing up. New wardrobe, new scenery, some startling new illusions. Big time stuff. Big money. What I've always wanted.
I see.
You're a good magician, Jim. You've got everything. Appearance, poise. With me and a girl to double for me in the big six, we can be a big success.
And half goes to you?
Half goes to me.
And you propose to use my own money to build the act?
Exactly.
What about the counterfeit money you took?
That I'll keep for my own protection. To see that I'm not double-crossed.
Well, your frankness is alarming, Anita.
Does it annoy you, Jim, to realize you're dealing with someone as ruthless as yourself?
Not at all. And the pulpit? I say we'll go right ahead. I mean, with your plans for the new act. The big illusion.
Good. You'll start interviewing girls for my double right away.
I will.
I'll be on the lookout myself. I don't want to put all the burden on my dear partner.
Thank you, Anita. Very thoughtful. Let me know if you find anyone.
Oh, Jim!
Yes, Anita.
Look who I found. Connie Nelson, my new double. This is Mr. Grafton, Connie, the great Grafton.
Hello.
How do you do? What do you think of her, Jim?
Well, not bad. Not bad at all.
She's the same height as I am, same weight. Even her features are much the same.
She looks amazingly like you, Anita. Except for her blonde hair.
Well, that's all the better. She can wear a black wig in the show, and offstage, nobody will know she's with the act.
Any objections to traveling, Connie?
Oh, no, Mr. Grafton. I'd love it.
You may find it a bit lonely. You won't be able to stay at the same hotel as the Princess Naya and I, or even be seen with us in public. No one, not even my agent, is going to know that there's more than one girl with the act.
Well, I see, but is that perfectly honest?
How do you mean?
Well, pretending I'm not with the act when I am.
Well, the world of magic is based on deception. But the people love it. You'll really be contributing to the amusement of the public.
Oh, in that case, I'd like to do it.
Very well. I'll come back in the morning at 10.
Thank you, I will. Goodbye, Mr. Gaston.
Goodbye, Connie.
Well, what do you think?
Interesting. Very interesting.
You mean her looks or her scruples?
They're both rather unusual.
Well, just so you don't become too interested, Jim.
What do you mean?
We don't need any complications.
Such as?
Either one of you forgetting there's only one Princess Naya.
I'm sure I won't forget that, Anita.
I'll see that she doesn't.
Yes, Anita. I'm quite sure that you will.
That theme is a double crosser right there.
Yep. Gotta be careful. Can't trust the magicans. You can't trust the magicans.
Nope. No, even the Macabre ones. You can't.
Yeah. Those are the ones you can trust the least.
Yeah.
It's their object to deceive you, those magicans.
There's an episode of the IT Crowd. And the girl, who's the boss, has this date lined up with this guy that has a beard. And her two office mates say he looks like a magician and she can't get this out of her head. And he's gesturing with his hands like a magician, and he doesn't realize it himself. It was a very funny scenario. I love that show, the IT Crowd.
The IT Crowd. I'm not familiar with that one.
There is a British comedy channel on Roku. They have all kinds of shows, including some old Mr. Beans and Red Dwarf and or not Red Dwarf. Well, no, yeah, I think so. Just other various British comedy shows.
Is that Fall V or something like that?
I don't know. It's on the Roku Pluto menu. I shouldn't say it's on Pluto TV.
It's on Pluto TV. Okay.
Pluto TV. There's a British comedy channel. Go into the subcategory of comedy, and it's there. They're usually on Sunday nights, and I think Monday or Tuesday nights. There's not a whole lot of episodes. They're funny as hell.
Cool. There was there, Fossum. Well, that's Fossum Sci-Fi. Never mind. I thought there was a Fossum UK channel as well.
There could be. So, Fossum? Yeah.
Yeah, FAWESOME.
Yeah. Yeah, they have a bunch of genre channels, Fossum does. Or, you know.
Yeah, they do.
Groupings of things. But we got a good genre tonight. Bad money.
Funny money. But the funny money ain't making anybody laugh here, you know?
Yep. And let's finish The Disappearing Woman. I want to hear this twist ending, Dave.
Yeah. Yep. It's coming.
Here's part two. We'll be back.
Anita has just given you an idea, hasn't she, Jim? And perhaps it could work if you're careful. You avoid speaking to Connie except on business until the act gets started and you're booked out of town. And then one day, you manage to run into her in a park.
Well, hello, Connie.
Oh,
you're watching the swan?
Mr. Grafton. Yes, I've been here for hours. You know, I get awfully lonesome.
Oh, you poor kid. I suppose you do.
If only I had someone to talk to.
A pretty girl like you shouldn't have much trouble about that.
Because, you see, I can't talk to anyone. If I did, I'd have to tell them who I am, that I'm with the act.
You're awfully honest, aren't you, Connie?
Well, of course.
You keep a secret very well. You know, I've been thinking, how would you like me to teach you something about magic? It would help pass the time for you.
Oh, I'd love it. Would you do that?
I'd have to arrange so that no one knew about it, not even Anita. I could teach you her part in the act. And then if she ever got sick and was unable to work, you could replace her. That would be a nice surprise for her, wouldn't it?
Brilliant.
And then, of course, someday, she might decide to leave the act.
That's the beginning, isn't it, Jim? You start working with Connie in secret, grooming her to take Anita's place. For Anita is going to leave the act, isn't she? Yes, she's going to disappear. One of these days when Connie is ready, Anita will arrive in town as the Princess Naya. But when the act leaves town, the Princess Naya will be Connie, wearing her black wig. But there are details to work out, and they're difficult. It's not until you reach the West Coast that a solution appears. And then one night, a Mr. Norman pays you a visit. He wants you to appear at a benefit to raise funds for a local charity.
It's going to be a big thing, Mr. Grafton. Every performer in town is taking part.
Well, I'd be glad to help out, but we're closing here Friday night. We leave for Los Angeles Saturday morning.
You couldn't stay over for Saturday night?
Why, I don't know. We don't open in Los Angeles till the first of the week.
Well, did you ever think about making the trip down the coast by boat?
By boat?
Mm-hmm.
Why, no, I hadn't.
My wife and I made the trip a few weeks ago. It'd give you a very good rest.
Yes, I can imagine.
I'll tell you. There's a boat leaving Saturday night about midnight. Now, why don't you stay over and work the benefit? We'll put you on the stage about 10 o'clock, so you'll have plenty of time to get to the boat.
Well, now you mention it, that's not a bad idea.
I was sure you'd see it.
But I'll tell you, Mr. Norman, I wouldn't be able to do my big illusion at a benefit. It requires too much work to set up.
Oh, that's all right. Just do some of your other stuff, just so you make an appearance.
Well, in that case,
it's all set?
I don't see why not. I'm always glad to help a good cause.
The setup couldn't be better, could it, Jim? As you talked to Norman, the whole thing took shape in your mind. A big benefit performance. Hundreds of people around. The perfect time for Anita's disappearance. If you don't use the big illusion, you will need only one girl. Both Anita and Connie will arrive to assist you. But Connie will do the act and go to the boat as the Princess Naya. And Anita's body will be in the secret panel of your large... Have the trunk put in your cabin. And once you're at sea, it will be very easy to dispose of Anita, won't it? But the next day, when you talk to Connie...
I can't understand it, Connie. You say you want to leave the act?
Yes, Jim, right away. I want to go when we close here Friday night.
Oh, but you can't do that.
You can find another girl to double for Anita.
But why, Connie? Why?
Please, don't ask me.
But you can't leave now, Connie. Please wait a few weeks.
No, I've made up my mind. The only way out.
Way out? Out of what?
All this secrecy. This meeting you privately. What it does to me. Can't you understand, Jim?
What it does to you?
Can't you see, Jim? I'm in love with you. It's not your fault. It just happened. You've been so good to me and so kind. There's no future for us.
Oh, Connie, darling. Of course there's a future for us, a wonderful future. Why do you suppose I've been working so hard with you, teaching you everything I know? It's because I want you as my partner.
But Anita's the Princess Naya.
Anita and I are going to split up.
But I couldn't take another woman's job. It wouldn't be fair.
There's nothing unfair about falling in love.
Mary?
Yes. I love you, Connie. I've loved you for a long time.
Have you, dear?
Of course. But now, about Anita. I'm going to talk to her.
When, Jim?
Right away, this week. I'll make arrangements to buy her half of the act.
Oh, can you do that?
I think so, but we mustn't let her suspect that we're in love.
Why not?
Well, it's not wise, for business reasons. She might take advantage of the fact to drive a hard bargain. So we probably shouldn't see much of one another for the rest of the week. But you meet me Saturday morning in Abby's jewelry store.
Oh? Abby's jewelry store? But why?
You'll see, Connie. You'll see.
¶¶
Hello, dear. Oh. You been waiting long?
Oh, no, just a few minutes. I've been looking at these cigarette cases. Aren't they beautiful?
Oh, yes, yes. Especially that gold one. It's very nice.
I'd like to buy it for you.
Oh, we aren't here to buy anything for me. We're going to buy something for you. A diamond engagement ring.
And it's all settled?
Yes. Anita is leaving the act. You're going to open in Los Angeles. In fact, you may have a chance to break in at the benefit tonight.
Tonight?
Uh-huh. Now, to tell you the truth, Anita and I had a little disagreement about our financial settlement.
Oh.
She's in a very bad humor. I don't know whether she's going to play the benefit or not.
Oh, I'll come to the theater.
No. You stay at your hotel. But be made up and ready at about 9:30. Then, if Anita doesn't want to go on, I'll call you.
Of course. I'll be waiting.
And now we'd better see about a ring.
Things are working out very well, aren't they, Jim? You're buying an engagement ring for Connie. Another step in setting the stage for Anita's disappearance. You've told Anita to be at the benefit at 9:30. And when she comes to your dressing room, you're ready for her. A few minutes later, Anita Ballard's body is in the secret panel of your trunk. Then you go to a phone and call Connie. And she hurries over and the act goes on at about 10 o'clock. Connie is nervous and excited, but she does the act perfectly.
How did I do, Jim? Was I all right?
You were good, Connie. Very good.
Oh, I'm glad. Well, I'd better change. We haven't much time, have we?
No. We'll take a taxi straight to the boat. By the way, keep on your black wig.
Oh.
You're the Princess Naya now, you know.
Well, that's right, I am. Oh, hardly seems possible.
You can dye your hair black on the boat. Oh, here are the men for the baggage. Excuse me, dear.
I'll be ready in a minute, dear.
Mm-hmm. Right in here, fellas. I'm all packed.
Is all this gold?
Yes, and I want it all put in my cabin.
Right, Mr. Grafton.
Now, be careful with that big trunk.
Okay. Take that in, Joe. Hey, this is a heavy one.
Yes, it is rather heavy.
I'll bet one of your best tricks is in here.
Yes, as a matter of fact, my very best trick. The disappearing woman.
Well, Jim, when you board the boat, go to your cabin and find your luggage all in place. You finally feel very safe, don't you? There's only the matter of getting rid of Anita's body, now hidden in your property trunk. When the boat reaches the open sea, she will have disappeared forever. Yes, it won't be long. You're glancing at your watch when there's a knock on the door.
Oh, Connie, come in.
How soon do we sail?
In about 15 minutes.
Good. And there's still time.
Time for what, darling?
For the cigarette case to arrive.
Cigarette case?
Mm-hmm. That gold cigarette case you admired this morning. I bought it for you. I had your initials put on it, so I couldn't take it with me. But they promised to deliver it to the boat.
You bought me such an expensive gift? But how could you afford it?
Well, the money was a present from Anita. I told her about our engagement.
You told her? When?
This afternoon, I had to. I felt it was dishonest to keep it from her. She seemed very happy about it. Gave me the money and insisted that I use it to buy your present. Oh, that must be the cigarette case now.
How do you do? I'm Rison, Treasury Department. I'd like to see Mr. Grafton.
Well, he's right here. Won't you come in?
What do you want?
Some counterfeit money was used to buy a cigarette case to be delivered to you here on the boat, Mr. Grafton.
Well, I don't know anything about it.
Counterfeit money?
Yes, the passer is described as a blonde girl about 20 years old. She an old dark man. They bought a diamond ring using good currency. Then later, she came in alone with the counterfeit. Now, just what's your connection to Miss Grafton?
Well, it's all very simple.
Keep out of this, Connie.
Mr. Grafton is the dark man, and I'm the blonde girl.
You are?
Oh, yes, I'm wearing a black wig.
What is this, Grafton? What are you trying to pull?
Please, this is a mistake. We're honest people.
I believe you when you got the money you spent for the cigarette case.
That money was given to me by a girl named Anita Ballard.
Mm-hmm. Where is she now?
But I don't know. She's gone.
Well, we'll pick her up. All right, come on. You'll both have to get off the boat.
Oh, now, wait a minute. It's time to sail.
I'll have the boat held until your luggage is taken out.
My luggage?
Well, yes, Mr. Grafton. We'll have to make a thorough search of your luggage. You know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we found the plates in the printing press for the counterfeit money right over there in that big property trunk.
Featured in tonight's story were Bill Foreman as the Whistler, Betty Lou Gerson, Les Tremaine, Gene Bates, Bill Boucher, and Jess Kirkpatrick. The Whistler was directed by George W. Allen, with story by George Adrian and Carol Nix, music by Wilbur Hatch.
CW joins us in the chat. Hiya, C-Dubs. Hope you are enjoying the show. We just wrapped up the Whistler, who was whistling.
Whistler, yep.
And,
let's start. I'm not looking to see how much time we got left. Les Tremaine, who starred in this as the Magican, he started off in radio with the First Nighter program, which he took over when, I think it was Don Ameche, took off for Hollywood before he took off for Hollywood, but it's in a variety of shows, including including some radio mystery theaters, a few of those that Les Tremaine did. So big radio, did some movies, did some television, and he's done it all, because now he's done Erie House Radio.
There you go. He's reached the pinnacle of his career.
Yep, and it's over now.
Yeah. And although Volgar is not with us, he's with us. Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garless Moral of the Story, written by Gar, presented by Dave.
Apologies to Gar. Always label your boxes. There you go.
Label your boxes. Yes, I have the printing press in here as we're making the money.
Yeah, there you go.
I guess I would imagine counterfeiting is there's a lot more technology involved. Because first of all, the paper is made real intricately. You know, there's a certain recipe to making the paper.
There is. It's actually intertwined with cloth as well, which is why when you go to places and they check things, $20 bills or higher, they get that little marker. And if they mark across it and it turns a different color than what they expect, it's a phony baloney bill.
Ah, how about that? I knew there was something they were doing.
And you know what? Those guys always get caught. I don't know why. It's like bank robbers usually. You know, they almost never get away with it. And yet they still keep doing it. Same with the money now. I know that the copy machines got so good at one point that it would fool vending machines. So people would use that to buy Cokes and stuff with.
Sure. And then in the good old days, kids would tie a string to like a washer for coin-operated machines.
Yep.
Use the same washer over and over.
Or just have a slug that would be about the same weight as a particular type of coin, yeah.
Yeah, because before they started magnetizing them, they were weight-driven.
Right.
The little coin catchers.
We're giving away all our Ute secrets here. You know, you got to be careful.
Yeah. Well, we'll start a new crane wave. I'll feel proud.
Man, talk about
another
our
one for you. Another one.
But speaking about our Ute, I just saw on Facebook my graduating class is having their 45th anniversary, whatever you call them, a get together. I said, wow, you know, that's
Mine was last year.
I can't believe I'm getting that old, Dale.
Yeah, we might make 50. We might make 50. Who knows?
Who knows?
That means at least 4 more years, 5 more years at Erie House, kids. At least.
At least. At least. And CW is right. Red Dwarf is amazing. That is such a funny show. That's such a funny show.
Yeah. Well, that would be on the British Comedy Channel then. I knew it was like sci-fi related. I haven't seen enough to know it's a comedy. I haven't watched any yet. Red Dwarf.
Yeah,
I'll have
to
try it. I love British humor.
You know, I first saw it when it was on our local PBS station here. Then it died and disappeared off the face of the act, but now the wife has a Brit box, and the entire series is right there. Gar's a big fan of Red Dwarf as well. Gar's a big fan of Red Dwarf. So
glad you could beam aboard and be here in person, Dave.
I'm telling you.
He's standing right next to me now. He came out of nowhere.
No,
there was this glow. And
it beamed me without my clothes again. Oh, my goodness.
Oh. Come on, man. I just ate. Come on. I just ate. Please.
Oh, my.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Well, we're going to delve into sci-fi now. A little tale from X-1 that I am not familiar with. This is one of the few I haven't heard. Called Protective, at least I don't recall it, by the title Protective Mimicry.
Yep. And it comes to us from, let me move this away. I was looking to see if I had an episode number, and it might be episode number 69. And it comes to us from June 10th of 1956.
The National Broadcasting Company at this time wishes to thank the editors and publishers of Galaxy Magazine for a special award which has just been presented to the program X-1. Award cites X-1 for the outstanding adaptation and the original method of presentation of adult science fiction stories to the vast audience that has shown increasing interest in this newest form of journalism. The NBC Radio Network is proud to receive this citation on behalf of X-1. NBC is also happy to acknowledge the enthusiastic response and support of the listening audience to this program. Your many letters of encouragement and constructive criticism are always gratefully received. Your criticisms carefully noted, and whenever possible, your suggestions acted upon. Please listen at the end of this program for a special free offer.
Ooh.
And now, X minus one. Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2. X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X-1. Tonight's story, Protective Mimicry, by Algis Budrys.
Frankly, I think I'll probably have to take my expense account clear up to the Central Gallic Civil Service Board. My friends tell me to forget it. But take it from me, a rap in the credit book like this isn't easy to laugh off. Not on a grade 4 civil service pay scale. So I've made my beef out in quadruplicate and filed it. Usually a special agent in United Galactic Federation's Department of the Treasury, Investigations Division, Currency Section, doesn't have much trouble with his swindle sheet. But this, no, this one's a corker. To understand, you got to know how they make the stuff. The Ungallic Mint is in New Geneva on Canopus 3. I remember I went around with the 40 Deci Credit Tour when I first joined the staff. The guide was a cute little brunette from one of the Rim stars who was later fired following an annual Pan Solstice office party. I didn't pay much attention to her spiel. She was dressed in the new Neo-Minoan style, but I got the general idea.
This is a demonstration machine, of course, but you will notice the indestructible fiber coming off that spool at the right. It goes into the slot in the machine there. Now, if you'll pass along, you see it goes between those two rollers through 6 or 7 chemical baths. No, I'm not sure what chemicals. That's restricted information. It's stamped, analyzed for flaws, dyed, and then run through this unit here. This is the most carefully guarded part of the process. The unit is removed from the plant each night and locked in the deep space vault on the satellite station directly overhead. After the strip emerges here, it is chopped into convenient lengths and carefully removed into armored cars. It is called money.
Well, what does that secret unit do?
Well, that's a very good question. You see, the currency is non-defaceable, fireproof, immune to wear, weather, and water. But the most important thing is an electronic pattern impressed into the fiber by that secret pattern. You all know when you cash a bill, it is passed over an electronic plate that reads the pattern. If the serial number and the pattern match, well, but if they don't, well, first I'll put an ordinary credit note over the beeper. There. Perfectly good. Now, a simulated counterfeit bill without the electronic pattern. Well, now, that wouldn't fool anybody long, would it?
Could anybody duplicate that electronic pattern?
Well, that's a very good question. Only the government has the equipment to put that in. Your currency is safe and sound. Don't you worry about that. Are there any more questions?
Yeah. How about a drink after the tour?
Well, that... Oh, that's a very good question.
It sure was. So was the answer. Well, getting back to money. The engraving, the chemical composition of the ink and the fiber would be tough enough to duplicate. But that electronic pattern snaps the clincher on it. That's why Chief Inspector Saxgard of my division looked sourly at me when I came into his office and spread a fistful of credit notes on his desk.
What's that?
What's it look like?
A handful of 50s. Why?
Put a couple of them over your beeper plate.
Okay. They're perfectly okay. What's it all about?
Look at the serial numbers.
3456578M.
Look at the others.
3456. What? Let me see them.
Save your eyes. They're all the same. 14 50-credit notes with identical serial numbers.
That's impossible.
And every one of them goes over a beeper plate, quiet as a sophomore climbing into a dormitory window after hours.
Formosa, where did you get these?
They came into the New York Clearinghouse from a branch on Deneb 11. The manager blew his top. He called us the minute he spotted them and sent them out to us.
How about the manager? Is he blabbing all over the Bankers Club about it?
I read the Ungallic Riot Act to him. He'll keep it under his hat.
Good. At least we won't have any financial panics for a while. Have you checked these through the lab?
Well, the ink and paper is government stock, and they match government beepers. The lab plates didn't squawk any more than yours did. Now, you could spend these anywhere as long as you only pass them one at a time.
Bumholzer, you know, since the beeper plate came in, we've been sitting on our tails in this department, building up our pensions.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Neither would I outside this office. But you know darn well nobody can expect to counterfeit a bill and get away with it. It's only because throughout the universe there's a certain percentage of people who will try anything once, and a corresponding percentage of purblind idiots who will accept anything with engraving on it as money that we're here at all. Now, I've seen cigar coupons and crayon sketches come into this office. I've seen premium offers from household magazines, jet bus transfers, where some people would try to pick a Yale lock with a quarter of a pound of butter. Now, the only reason any queer can pass is because some goggle-eyed nudnik neglects to use his beeper plate. But I worry. I worry. For 15 years, I've sat in this stinking office and waited for somebody to invent a matter duplicator.
Well, it looks like you can stop worrying. Look at those bills, identical down to the whiskey stain in the corner.
All right, Bumholzer. You call transportation and get out to Deneb 11 and find out if anybody in that neighborhood has a matter duplicator, or if he hasn't, what he has got.
I picked up the department shuttle to the satellite and made fair connections up to Deneb 11. It's a four-day run on drive, and I get free fall six, so I was glad to hit the port in Glub, which, so help me, is the name of the only city on the place. Deneb 11 is what we call in the department a mud ball. It's a jungle world with an atmosphere like a swatch of Harris Tweed. I was smoking a cigarette when I got off the shuttle, and the air I pulled in made the smoke taste like well-decayed leaf mold. I was wringing wet 2 minutes after I left the air-conditioned port. I noticed the local costume would get you arrested on any beach in the galaxy, but it didn't matter since there's nothing titillating about pasty skin dripping with weary perspiration. I checked in with the regional office and found the resident agent tinkering with his air conditioner.
Hi, Bumholzer. You know anything about the sealed power pack on this condenser?
Yeah, if you keep banging at it like that, you'll crack the seal on the atomic shielding and your posterity will thank you. Three heads at a time.
Oh, I guess I better not fool with it. Now take off your pants and pull up a chair.
I don't mind if I do. Is it always this humid?
Oh, no. In the hot season, it's worse. I'd send for a replacement part, but the fax line isn't too reliable. The last time I sent for a sealed unit, they shipped back an overage sea lion.
Yeah, I know. I was on Polar Station on Ganymede when my heater element broke down. I faxed for 3 feet of element, and they shipped me back 3 feet of elephants.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you're here about the queer bills, huh?
Yeah. Got any lines on it?
Well, my orders are to lay off and let the central office handle it. Be my guest.
Any ideas?
No. Where do you figure to start?
Well, this is the only city. I'll have to check it out. Have you got a list of authorized beeper plates?
Somewhere. Let's see here. Oh, look out!
Why?
There's a whittle fly on your arm.
Hey, how does a thing that size get through the filters?
Insects on Deneb are tricky. This one is a non-filterable virus in the larval stage, and it blows up to this size. Carve his initials in your arm if he gets a good bite. That's why he's called a whittle fly.
The whittle fly was only one of the darlings that made the fair city of Glub a garden spot. They had one cute little tyke called the laboratory beetle, because when he bit you, he typed your blood and followed you around for days getting refills. I had one take a sample of me as I went out the door of the residency with a list of beeper plates, and he followed me from store to store while I checked every installation in the city. The little devil would step up to the bar every once and again to take another shot of my hemoglobin. I even tried ducking in a men's room as fast, but he'd be waiting for me when I came out. Well, I slogged through Glub for 3 days and then poured myself back into the resident's office. Did he come in?
Who?
The laboratory beetle.
No, they usually hang around in the hall and wait.
Ah.
Sometimes when I've got a poker game going, you can see three or four of the little angels buzzing around outside waiting like chauffeurs outside the opera.
Wow.
And draw a blank?
Well, I found 7 defective beeper plates, but nobody remembers any queer bills being passed. You know, who checks serial numbers? They must have come in one at a time. And the clerks at the bank always were out to lunch and referred me to the next guy. You got any lotion for insect bites?
Desk drawer.
In a way, the beeper plates make it tougher. Nobody even looks at the bills anymore. Just throw them over the plate, and if no bells ring, it's okay.
Well, how about the other angle?
Matter duplicator? I checked invoices and purchase records. Nobody's been buying electronic parts that can't account for every tube. I thought I had something. One fellow bought 12 of those giant lithium cathode tubes, but it turned out his wife was having them wired as lamp bases. Well, I better be going. I hate to keep my little insect friend out there in suspense as to cocktail time.
You got another lead?
Yeah, I found a bar that makes a Tom Collins with real lemon juice instead of battery acid. I managed to duck my lab beetle in a revolving door. He went around twice and shot out into the street, so I settled down at a table at the bar and tried to make believe that I couldn't taste Deneb 11 atmosphere in my Tom Collins. I was chewing on an ice cube when I looked up.
Mr. Baumholzer?
That's right.
I want to talk to you about money.
Sophomore climbing through a window after dark. It's almost a detective type metaphor
Yep. One thing interesting I didn't realize, and I researched it after this, where he said he faxed and asked for something and ended up with two fetal elephants or something like that. The fax machine actually, because, you know, this was 56. The fax machine was actually invented before the telephone. I didn't realize that. It could even send pictures because it used a pendulum going back and forth.
That strikes me as odd.
But the problem with it was they were only point to point. It wasn't until the 1970s when the United Nations, the UN, set a standard for fax machines. Then they could all talk to each other. Other than that, it was like one office in one city to one office in another type thing. Very interesting. It all came because of my interest, because of this story in X-1.
How about that? Science fiction made into science.
Yep.
This is another one with the snappy patter, which reminds me of the film, the original version of The Thing. That thing goes lightning fast. Okay. It makes it fun to watch a second time because it's like, did I miss anything? Because these guys were rifling their lines right out.
Yeah, it's Mandel Kramer again. We've heard him so much in so many of these mystery theaters as well. But he was all over. He's another one of these guys that was all over the radio. He just has the great recognizable voice. You know, like Norman Rose does, and all these other guys that we have that their voice is so recognizable that you hear them all, and William Conrad, you hear them all over the place on radio. And this is another one, Mandel Kramer, who became the second best Johnny Dollar and took the series 1961 through 1962 till it concluded. His is more of an intellectual Johnny Dollar, where, you know, every other week on the one with Bob Bailey, he would get knocked out, you know. Concussion time. More concussions than an NFL quarterback. Yeah.
That's right. He's an NFL quarterback. Some of them never had concussions and still act like they have. Who knows?
That's true.
But another thing that is true, we're going to wrap up Protective Mimicry from X-1.
He was a terrestrial, but he'd been on Deneb a long time because he was wearing the native garment about the size of a 5-pound sugar sack. His hair, which was potato field gray, was arranged in the old-fashioned Presley style. You know, the ancient long sideburns, duck's tail in the rear that vice presidents wear in family-style banks. His ears had little bits of bone stuck in them, and his eyebrows wandered all over his face, and he stood about 6'8". And I waited him out, and presently he spoke up again.
You are the same Mr. Baumholzer who's been going around asking all those questions about duplicate un-Gallic notes?
That's right. Can I help you, Mr.
Munger, Duodecimus Munger.
Now, this bid's fair to be fascinating. I was under the impression that my mission here was just a wee bit on the secret side.
There are no secrets in Glub.
Now, won't you pull up a chair, Mr. Munger?
I'm afraid I haven't time.
Well, join me in a drink.
Are you really the Mr. Baumholzer that's working on this case for the Treasury Department?
Yeah, sure. You're not the fellow that's turning out these duplicates, are you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I am.
What?
And don't move. This is a Power 30 Mistral Coagulator I have.
Look out with that thing. You've got it pointed at my head.
Yes. I've got it set on high charge. It will fuse your brain solid.
Well, what else is new?
Now, Mr. Baumholzer, stay right behind that table.
Now, let's not make any rash decisions now.
Well, I can't very well see how I could let you live.
Oh, come on. Try. All right, now drop the gun.
I'm afraid we'll be collecting a crowd.
Give me that. Don't try to pick it up.
I won't. I had something completely different in mind.
Just like in those ancient legends the archaeologists keep digging up, the ones with the hard-boiled detective and the beautiful blonde, I felt the traditional roof fall in on the back of my head. As I went black, I remember thinking how odd it was that it was happening to me some 500 years after Spillane the Scrivener. I came to in the same archaic fashion with my head going around in a free orbit around my neck.
Baumholzer, are you all right?
I can't see. I'm blind. Everything's black.
Well, open your eyes.
Oh. Where is he?
Who?
The guy who slugged me. What am I doing back at your office?
Oh, some bartender brought you in.
I thought you passed out from too much lemon juice.
It was a guy named Munger. Which way did he go?
Beach me. Munger? Tall feller in native dress?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you might as well forget about it.
Why?
Well, I can order a pickup on him the next time he's in town. They'll sock him away in a psycho ward for a while. Forget it.
Look, I am not an old lady calling up complaining that the nasty delinquents are teasing my cats. That Munger's tied in with the queer.
Him?
He said he was the passer.
Well, that can't be. Munger.
You got a file on him?
Yeah. I get a number of complaints on him, so do the local cops. He's, well, I didn't want to make trouble. He's a very wealthy man.
I'll bet. What does he do?
Well, he's a merchant or something in a native village. Once or twice a year, he comes out and paints the town, but a counterfeiter?
I would like to talk to him again with the mistral in my hand.
He had a mistral? Well, that's a violation of a municipal ordinance. You're supposed to check him at the quarantine.
Look, I'm not investigating parking tickets and violations of the anti-noise laws. This is a counterfeiting case. Now, do you know where I can find him?
Well, he's probably gone back to his village.
Where's that?
Out in the jungle.
All right, get out your rubbers, friend. We're going out after him. Suppose you fill your bathtub full of mud, build a fire under it, turn on the shower, and crawl in and wallow a little. Do that, and you've got a fair idea of the Denebian jungle. I went out with Hall, the resident agent, and we started off.
Stick close, Baumholzer. The visibility is about 10 feet.
I'll eat everything I can see within 10 feet. Ow!
What happened?
I walked into a tree. Help me up out of the mud. We puddled on for a couple of hours. The rain was so thick I didn't see the trees until I bounced off of them and sat down in the warm mud. I reflected as I struggled to my feet what a terrible waste. In the beauty salons of Charles of the Ritz asteroid, ladies from all over the galaxy paid thousands of credits for hot mud baths to take the wrinkles out and make their skin smooth and caressable. And here was I getting a much more thorough treatment every time I sat down. They issue a lot of special equipment from department stores, and it all functioned perfectly. My neo-latex galoshes were fine, but stuck in the mud. My Minipower goggles and wipers kept my eyes clear, but they didn't keep me from crashing into every tree. My leak-proof sportsman's flashlight stayed dry as a bone, but powerful as it was, it couldn't light up more than 3 feet in the pelting rain. Paul, the resident, led the way, consulting a compass and a waterproof map, and finally we stopped, and I noticed that there wasn't any rain coming down on me.
It's a rain shelter. The natives build them.
Kind of them.
Well, they're on all the trails. If you go more than a day in the rain, you go punchy from water drumming on your hat.
I believe it.
Well, now, don't sit down. You'll sink in.
I don't know. Theoretically, a broader base should keep you from sinking like snowshoes.
Well, also increases the suction.
I'll stand. How far is Munger's village?
Well, either 2 miles or 22. I can't read the map very well.
Hey, wait a minute. Listen.
Well, that's the rain.
No. You hear that squelching? Somebody's coming.
Oh, yeah. From over there.
Natives?
Maybe.
There he comes.
Well, we've got first pick on the shelter. It's a native tradition. First come, first dry.
Yeah, there's somebody out there, all right.
Who's there? Who is it?
A friend of mine, Mr. Baumholzer.
All right, Munger. Where did you come from?
Don't move. I have several friends pointing long spears at your kidney.
Ole! Ole!
Shall we go, gentlemen, back to my village? I believe you were looking for it.
Munger was so intent on me that he didn't seem to notice as Hall sidled off into the darkness, and when he did, he set up a desperate cackle. He had a few of his fraternity brothers chase down the trail with spears waving wildly, but they came back murmuring some kind of a Choctaw, which seemed to carry the implication that Hall had gotten away like a big-bottomed turtle.
Well, Mr. Baumholzer, your companion's action has saved your life. For a while.
Yeah, he'll bring back a platoon of Marines, and they'll reduce that village to a bullion cube.
We'll just have to hold you as a hostage in case help should arrive.
Thanks.
At any rate, shall we get back to the village?
He had about 10 natives with him, each one about 7 foot tall, with those big, flat feet that evolved on Deneb for walking in primordial ooze. They were dressed in the standard native loincloth with matching accessories, namely 10-foot spears. When, as we started out along the trail, I got a good look at Munger's loincloth, it was composed of tastefully arranged 1,000-credit notes. Well, by the time we got back to the village, the rain had stopped. The humidity, of course, was still 120%, and the only difference was that the moisture just loitered around rather than actually falling. There was some kind of a clam bake going on in the village. The natives were pounding a couple of drums, and as far as I could see, getting rapidly stinko on some kind of jungle juice that they passed around in huge gourds. They were leaping and dancing, and as far as I could tell, doing snappy things and fancy patter as I sat on some kind of a low mushroom and tried to ignore the two spears that were pressed against my throat. It felt as if a nervous barber was trying to shave me with his razor tied on the end of a 10-foot pole. After a bit, Munger strode up to me with all the dignity of the lord of the jungle, and he waved the spears a foot away, pulled up a mushroom, and sat down.
Actually, you know, that wasn't a native rhythm at all. The original Namibian music is a kind of quiet, flute-like melody, something like Mozart.
That didn't sound very flute-like.
Yes, I know. One of the first terrestrial anthropologists out here to study the Danebs took recordings of their music. And then, to be polite, he played them in a few recordings that he'd made on an earlier field trip. Unfortunately, they were from that lost rocket colony on Ceres. Their music was a degenerate ancient form called, I believe, Roland Rock. The Danebs liked it. And they've been doing it ever since.
Well, what's the party?
They're propitiating the tree. I don't know why. It's never failed yet. But they're very conservative. They've got to go into this act every night before I can do my stuff. Lasts all night. Want a drink?
No, no, thanks.
Oh, I wish I had a fifth of something civilized. I've been drinking this native swamp water for much too long.
He was right. They kept it up all night, and I sat trying to figure out in which hut Munger kept his machinery to make those duplicate bills. Finally, the weak light that passes for dawn on Deneb came up, and the natives quit hollering.
Let's go, Bonhoeffer. I hate to keep a man in suspense. You're curious about those duplicate bills. Well, now you're going to find out how it's done.
Well, it's good of you to show me. I suppose your theory is that I'll never live to tell about it.
That's very sensible of you. I like a man who can face facts.
We walked across the mud square to the base of a tremendous tree, which I gathered was the guest of honor for last night's shivaree. I still couldn't see the connection, but I was willing to wait. The natives sat around in a deathly hush, and Munger and I stepped forward.
You notice? Nothing up my sleeves. As a matter of fact, no sleeves.
And not much arm, either.
Now, I take this 50-credit note. Care to examine it?
Oh, I've seen it, and 14 others like it.
Yes, I only use a 1,000-credit bill when the natives need new loincloths. These 50s are a lot easier to dispose of.
Oh, I don't know. I traced them to you.
But that was a mistake. One of my contacts got a little greedy, spent too many bills in one place. All right. Now, I used to have the natives make a loud noise, but I'll use your gun instead here. You see, I take this bill, fold it, so, and so, and so, and there.
What are you making a paper plane for?
Just watch. I raise the note in one hand, I aim at the tree, and I fire your gun up in the air. Like this.
As he let fly with my gun, Munger sailed the paper airplane straight at the tree, and it sailed right into the foliage.
Now watch!
The bill came sailing back out of the leaves, and right behind it came another one. And then the air was filled with paper planes. Squadrons, wings, armadas of paper airplanes, each one made up of a folded 50-credit note. They sailed out over the whole village, and Munger set the natives to collecting them and bringing them back.
There you are. There'll be several thousands of them. Look, 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 look.
Genuine. Absolutely genuine. And I suppose they'd go over a beeper plate without a tinkle.
Startling, isn't it?
Protective mimicry.
Yes, yes, precisely. You know, I discovered this tree 6 years ago while I was attempting to evade the clutches of the law on a confidence rep. I swung an axe at it to blaze a trail, and 50 axes came bouncing back at me.
Well, I never heard of any plant developing mimicry to this extent. I know some plants and animals assume dangerous life forms as a camouflage, but this...
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a botanist. All I know is that you scare the tree with a loud noise. You throw something at it, and it duplicates what it thinks is the danger. Well, speaking of danger, it doesn't look as if your colleague is bringing any help. Oh, I'll miss your company. Interesting. You'll be shot with your own gun.
Now, look, Munger.
Don't wriggle. I hate a moving target. What is that?
Looks like the cops, Munger, at the edge of the village.
Baumholzer, where are you?
We outnumber them.
Olea!
I'll get you anyway.
No, no.
You can't run away from me. I'll shoot.
I broke for the other side of the square, and just as he shot at me, I tripped over a pot and went flying smack into the tree. Well, that's about it. Here we sit in the spaceport on Deneb 11, and I'm darned if I'll pay our transportation back until I hear that the office is going to okay my expense account. Munger? Oh, he's in jail at New Alcatraz. Once he missed his shot at me, it was all over. After I fell into the tree, he didn't stand a chance against us. That's right. Us. All 168 of me. Right, Ed?
You have just heard X-1.
Here is an important special announcement. In appreciation of bringing adult science fiction to the listening audience through the medium of this program, X-1, Galaxy Magazine wishes to make the following free offer to our listeners. For the first 2,500 who write in requesting it, we will send a sample copy of Galaxy Magazine at absolutely no cost. This is an opportunity to read the finest in adult science fiction, just as you listen to it each week here on X-1. To get your free sample copy of Galaxy, just write a postcard or letter to X-1, NBC, Radio City, New York 20, New York, and ask for your free copy. Be sure to print your name and address plainly on your card or letter. This offer can be made only once. So if you want your own free copy of this leading science fiction publication, be sure to write without delay. Here is the address again. Write to X-1, NBC, Radio City, New York 20, New York. Your sample copy of Galaxy will be sent to you without obligation of any kind.
Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Protective Mimicry, written by Algis Burgess, and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in tonight's cast were Mandel Kramer, Terry Keane, Charles Penman, Dick Hamilton, and Wendell Holmes. This is Roger Tuttle. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Copy of Galaxy, just send a postcard to X-1, NBC, Radio City, New York 20, New York. Now be sure to print your name and address plainly on your card. This offer can be made only once, so if you want your own free copy of this leading science fiction publication, be sure to write without delay. The address again, X-1, NBC, Radio City, New York 20, New York. The Roaring Twenties in song and story. Hear Gordon McRae in The Best Things in Life Are Free tonight.
Yeah. Bet you those old Galaxy magazines are worth a pretty penny today, especially since they were printed on paper that didn't last too well. So if any were saved, well...
Put them in a vacuum bag, yeah.
Yep. And who did that back in the 50s? Hmm? Nobody.
Nobody. I don't think we had space bags back then.
Space bags. is that what they're calling them?
There's a
All
show
right.
that would have a space bag. If there's a show that would have a space bag, it would have been X minus one, I tell you.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Didn't think of it that way. Oh, I learned something. And so can you. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story written by Gar and presented by me.
You. You.
Great. Great. Apologies to Gar. Some things are worth more than they're worth. There you have it.
What a profound thought. That wasn't so profound there, yeah.
I got double whammied.
Double whammy.
Triple whammy.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, that's what you get when they let me do a moral there.
Yep. Well, that's okay.
Finely written, poorly portrayed.
That's why we need you back, Brother Gar.
That's right. Eerie House in a nutshell.
And that's where it belongs. In a nutshell.
Yes, in a nutshell. Hopefully CW or somebody will be joining us. We can't stand each other anymore. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, we haven't worn out each other's welcome yet. That's for sure. Yeah.
No, not at all. But we're working on it. More funny bills tomorrow.
Yes.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The Money Makers.
Yeah.
I think I'm a bit too loud. There's a collie upstairs scratching at the carpet. I'm going to dig my way to daddy or something.
Indeed.
They are the funniest dogs. They look regal, but they are hilarious. They are hilarious.
Yep.
Almost psychic.
Well, that's cool. Yeah.
Almost psychic.
Psychic?
I mean, all dogs, I think all dogs to one degree or another are in tune with their owners.
Yeah, I believe you're right. Yeah.
These guys are almost to the point of being psychic. It's creepy. CW is going to go Xerox a few hundred for shopping.
There's a name I haven't heard for a while. Xerox. Yeah.
Well, you won't have to spend it here. We're still free. And plan to be for as long as we can.
Forever.
It's free for us,
ever.
But it's free for you. That's the deal.
Yeah, but we do have a lot of fun here. We get, I know we don't have time, but I do want to say once again how Golden Age Radio was such a great time for short stories. Because they would take these short stories or make up short stories for these half-hour episodes and such. It's just what a great time it was for short stories.
And that's what hosting has been for me and you, Dave, is to present them either as a movie host or radio host or radio show host, I should say. And it's sharing short or longer stories, and that's what it's all about. We love to share them with you, and we're going to keep doing it, including tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern, followed hopefully by Guy the Ghoul Horrible Horror live, but if not, I am sure he will be in the vault.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
I didn't have a joke.
Can you dig it?
perfect.
Ouch.
Just about perfect. Ooh, good things, because my hands are a-quaking and my vision is a-dimming.
Okay, well, then we should probably keep this short between your dog trying to get at you and you need to get some sugar.
Something. Because I'm getting more jittery and getting weird. I'm going to get weird on you, Dave.
Ain't the first time, buddy. Hey, let's do it. Let's close up early, shop early tonight. Let's bring a new one, the only Schnozola, to wrap up our show tonight.
Here he comes, Mr. Durant. Durant.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Comes the biggest finish. And Inca Tinka good, yeah.
Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.
She's in DuPont, Michigan.
Zoom's out.